Hello, and welcome to the Remote Podcast, episode 31. This podcast is all about location independence, digital nomadism, and living life on your terms. Each week, we interview a new guest on the show, and this week I sat down with Kate Smith, founder of Wi-Fi Nomads and the Remote Nomad blog. She's also a participant of the inaugural Remote Year program. To preface, I loved this interview with Kate. We focus a big chunk of this interview on Kate's experience realizing that she was unfulfilled and unhappy at her dream job after graduation. Most importantly, Kate shares what she did about her unhappiness and how she took actionable steps that led her to where she is today. I saw a lot of parallels between her story and mine, and I really appreciate her willingness to share some real standout moments from her journey with us. Lastly, Kate also shares the experience of going on Remote Year, her lessons learned on the program, her favorite and least favorite places, and much more. She also dives into her new project, Wi-Fi Nomads, in which she hopes to help more people bridge the gap to becoming digital nomads through learning the essential skills and through personal development. So let's dive into it. Hey, Kate, it's so great to have you on the podcast today.
Thank you for having me.
Awesome. So I'm really excited about this interview because I've been following your blog since you started becoming a digital nomad and participating in programs like the Remote Year. But to quickly introduce you to my audience, Kate Smith is the founder of Wi-Fi Nomad and the Remote Nomad blog, as well as participant on the inaugural Remote Year program. And yeah, like I said, I'm super excited to have you on board and to really dive into your story because there's just so much to unpack. So I wanted to first off give you a chance to give us a summary of everything you've done up to now. So I'll let you take it away.
Yeah, I have a similar story to many people. I went to school for business. I graduated. I landed what was my dream job at the time. I was a project manager at an advertising agency. So that was really exciting at first. And then after a few years of doing that, I felt the same way that many people do. I was frustrated by the lack of freedom and flexibility that came with the job. I had 2 weeks vacation time a year. And for someone that really likes to travel and explore other cultures, that was very challenging. So I got to a point where I knew I needed to make a change. And I put together a criteria list of what my next endeavor had to include, my next job. And I thought of teaching English abroad. I thought that was one of my only options, so to say, to make money while traveling. And then I came across the program Remote Year. And that's when I was introduced to this whole digital nomad concept. So at that time when I joined Remote Year, I mean, I had been applying for remote jobs prior, probably for months, and just no luck. Mm-hmm. It was one of my first endeavors where, you know, when you do something and you work really hard, you usually get results, right? And I felt like I was putting everything into landing this remote job and it just wasn't panning out. And then once I joined Remote Year and I was immersed in this lifestyle, everything came together. And I think that's because I was now surrounded by people with that non-traditional mindset. And then on that program on Remote Year, that's when I started my travel blog, The Remote Nomad, to share my story. And during when I had with the blog, a lot of people would reach out to me with two common questions. One was, how do I find a remote job? How do I earn an income remotely? And then the second one was, how do I do this? How do I just go to a country and be okay and know everything that I need to know? And it was really hard for me to convey that just in emails with people. And it would take a lot of time. It's an easy concept if you understand how it works. But if you don't understand how it works, it can be very confusing and overwhelming.
Right.
You know, with my experience being on Remote Year and seeing what was working, what wasn't working, where the gaps were, along with this feedback and information from my readers, that's where Wi-Fi Nomads was born. So the objective of Wi-Fi Nomads is really essentially to help people learn how to live this lifestyle. But it goes beyond that in the sense that it's really about creating a lifestyle that is more fulfilling and passionate and putting your lifestyle first and having work around that instead of putting work first and trying to navigate your lifestyle around there. That's sort of where how everything sort of came together. It was just a progression of being frustrated in my corporate job and looking at my options, and one thing led to another. And now here we are.
That's perfect. That's a great summary. And so before we got into everything you talked about with being frustrated about your first job out of college, I wanted to talk about the pre-adult years. I was reading in your bio on your website that you were very adventurous growing up and you were always used to living an unordinary life. I think I read write something about you being on a music video, reality TV show, meeting celebrities. So I wanted to ask you, what was your relationship with living an unconventional lifestyle and being adventurous and travel while you were growing up?
When I was much younger, I was very shy and more quiet and reserved. And then I can't quite remember at what point that changed, but I started to try to pursue things that were a bit out of the ordinary. And it started with smaller things. And every time I tried, something came through and it happened. Even if it was like low odds. Like, I mean, one time it even came down to like there were Justin Bieber tickets going on the radio. And, you know, your chances of actually winning are slim to none. But I was like, maybe I'll call. And then I won Justin Bieber tickets. So it was just a series of these small events where I'm like, okay, maybe I'll try this. And then it ended up happening and working. And then those smaller things gave me the confidence to pursue even bigger and more ambitious things. So one thing led to another. And then the more you start doing these more ambitious, random things, it's almost like the more you attract it into your life.
Yeah. I think I really like the way you put it, because it's almost like I was talking to Charles Du, who's also a participant of Remote Year, and he has like a product management background. So he actually talks about a similar thing to you, but he actually used the term like experimentation, you know, rapid prototyping. So I wanted to ask you, like, looking back on these experiences when you're growing up and taking these risks that ended up paying off, what do you think was your takeaway from that? How do you think you carried that throughout the rest of your life?
Sorry, can you say that one more time?
What did you learn from, you know, those experiences, taking those risks and having them pay off and realizing that stepping out of your comfort zone and doing something that you might have been previously afraid to do was actually something that was inherently rewarding?
Yeah, I mean, I think it just gave me confidence, I guess what I took away from it mostly. And you have to be ready to face fear. I mean, obviously, with everything, there's some level of fear, right? And people are scared of failure. So you almost have to lean towards that fear and that possibility and be okay with that. There's a lot of things that probably didn't work out, but I don't even remember them now because I've been so focused on, okay, what's next? And those great things. You know, oftentimes you think the whole world's going to crumble if one thing doesn't go right, and the world doesn't crumble. And then when you go after these more ambitious type of things and they have a way of working out, it's quite amazing. And from all those experiences, I mean, at the end of the day, it came down to it just gave me more confidence to do the next thing.
Yeah. And I think that's totally in line with what a lot of other people in the digital nomad space, even entrepreneurs, talk about this idea of being okay with not being okay.
Exactly.
And understanding that that risk taking, like we always perceive that there's more risk than actually exists. And this can be something that's quite difficult for people to snap out of. So moving on to college and then into your first job. How did you go from you start out being shy, then you start taking risks and having them pay off, and then going back and following through the conventional system? So how did you get funneled back into more of a traditional mindset?
Honestly, when I went to university, I just thought that's what you did. You went to elementary school, you went to high school, then you went to university. I just thought that was what you do. I didn't question that. And I've learned over time to question things more and understand the options out there, just to question those things. I think when I was younger taking these risks, I didn't realize how non-traditional it was. It just was becoming part of me to do these random things. At first, my family was always taken back by these things I was doing. And then eventually they became so used to me doing these random things that are just out of the ordinary that they just accepted it. And it's just like, oh God, what is next? What is the next thing that you're doing? And it was always just this surprise. I mean, I didn't foresee it when I was younger that I was doing something so out of the ordinary, which is why I went to university, got this job. And big moment was that when I was working, it was my dream job. It literally was my dream job. I was living where I wanted to live. I was living in the city. It was my dream job. And I just remember sitting in my condo apartment and thinking, I am working to live, to work to live, to work to live. And this is just some vicious cycle. And I don't feel fulfilled or happy. I have this amazing job that I've always wanted, and I just don't feel that fulfillment or happiness. And I think that sort of led me to start thinking of my options. I mean, it took a long time from that moment to the time that I actually became a digital nomad was probably a year. So it's something I knew I needed to make a change. I didn't know what that looked like. It was a long process. I remember getting closer to the time of me becoming a digital nomad. I remember I was really exploring my options at that time. And at that time as well, my grandma was really sick and she passed away. And I think that a lot of things were in play at that moment. And I think that it was just yet again, another sort of wake up call, right? You know, we only have so much time. And I don't know, I just wanted to feel passion and fulfillment. And I wanted to have like control over my life and my lifestyle.
Right. Yeah. And I think what you mentioned is something that a lot of young people, especially millennials who graduate from school, that's what they realize. You know, a lot of people going to school, going to high school, going to college, it's just part of the system. And yes, you have some degree of decision making when you're in college, like what major you're going to pick, but it's all within a set of well-defined, carved out path that's laid out in front of you. So I think, you know, myself included, once you graduate and you start working, many people have that moment where it's like, wow, is this really it? And that's when people start to question. That's when people develop that introspection, whether it's through reading books, listening to podcasts, whatever. But I think that's something that I'm starting to see a lot more of, especially with other people I'm interviewing and also with other people that I know from school. So I wanted to dive into what I consider this year of self-discovery for you and what your mindset was and how you tackled everything. Because I know obviously that year was not a straight line. There were a lot of different twists and turns, but I wanted to get a sense of how you approached things, how you navigated that process and how you had to make changes if something you tried out didn't work, for example.
Yeah, absolutely. My process was a very long process. When I was a project manager at the advertising agency, it was more traditional and I knew everything was going online. So I shifted my role from project management to traditional to online. So I was developing those online skill sets.
While you were at your job?
Yeah. I went from one role of the advertising agency project management, and then I switched, went to a different company, smaller, more web dev type focus, so that I could build those skill sets. Because I didn't know that I needed it to become a digital nomad. I just knew everything was going online and that was the way to head.
Okay.
Yeah, career-wise, just smart career choice. Okay, keep up with the trends and where things are going. I mean, at the time, I knew I needed to make a change. I started to save up money. I picked a quit date, and no matter what, that was my quit date. Whether I had something figured out or not, that was the date I was going to quit. And I started saving up money. And then, very oddly, probably like 2 weeks before I was going to quit, our company, because it was so small, was not doing so well financially. So I was let from my job, which was almost like the universe's way of saying, okay, you have to do this. There's no extending the date. Yeah. So then it was sort of, I guess, perfect timing. So I had some of that money saved up because I knew that I wanted to quit and start exploring other opportunities. So what I did, what that journey looked like, is there was a few things that were going on at the time. I was exploring during that time, I was exploring what my interests were because I was so consumed with work for so many years that I was like, I don't even know what I'm passionate about anymore. I don't know what I like to do. Do I want to do this? What do I love?
Yeah.
So I started pursuing these different hobbies, whether it was like a painting class, trying painting, taking language classes, trying these things out and seeing what resonated most with me. Mm-hmm. I also made a criteria list of what my job had to have. And it had to have the flexibility for travel and incorporate travel. And I had no idea what that looked like. I just knew it had to be incorporated. And then from there, I started thinking, okay, what are my options? What meets this criteria list? So my three options were a new career choice. I was really into health and fitness at the time. So pursuing something in that avenue, I explored teaching English. I took my certificate to teach English. And at the same time, I came across Remote Year. I submitted my, at that point in time, it was just submit your email and we'll let you know when this opens. So I submitted my email and then months later they said, okay, applications are open. So I had all these things going on. I was taking my certificate to teach English. I had applied for Remote Year. I was talking to people and exploring this new career opportunity. And I figured, okay, I'm going to explore these three areas that I've narrowed it down to and let's just see what happens and what it comes down to. So then Remote Year, I got accepted. For me, it just felt right. It felt so right and so true to the direction I wanted to head that I didn't even question it. I know a lot of people overthink it and analyze and okay, what are all the pros and cons? But it just, for me, didn't have any nervousness about it at all. I just wanted to do it. It was a long process evaluating what was important to me, making that criteria of how I wanted to shape my future, exploring those avenues and essentially seeing what panned out.
Right. And I'm glad you ended on Remote Year because there's a lot to unpack with what you just said. And thank you for being so candid and sharing everything. So the first thing I wanted to kind of rewind to is how you decided to build up your skills and switch to a different company to build online skills, which I think was unintentional from a digital nomad standpoint, but very smart in terms of what you did next. And then What I'm curious about is when you picked your quit date, what made you decide to pick a quit date and how far in advance did you pick it? Was it like a year from the day you started your new job? I'm just curious to get your psyche and mindset in making a resolute decision like that.
Honestly, I think it was about 3 or 4 months. I made a decision that I was going to quit, and that quit date was about 3 or 4 months after.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Okay. No, I think that's interesting because usually people were like really cautious. They'll be like, okay, I'll have to stay. I want to stay at my job for at least a year. But it seemed like you're feeling so strongly about making a change.
Yeah.
That I think something like that didn't really matter to you.
Exactly. I think that sometimes people can really overdo it and take a lot of time and be saving a lot of money. Maybe I'm just more risk averse, I guess that's the term, in that, okay, I needed some money saved, but I wasn't going to, you know, have 15 backup plans. I really, honestly, there's so many times in my life where I don't really have a backup plan and I have no idea how it's going to work, but it always has a way of working out. Always. So many times in my life. And remote year was the optimal prime example of how that happened because I needed to land something full time or I was going home. So I was arriving in Prague. I had put down a $3,000 deposit. I was arriving in Prague. And if I didn't have a full-time income within 4 weeks, I would have to go home. I just had faith that it was going to work out. In the past, I've been in so many situations where I'm like, I have no idea how this is going to happen, but I'm just going to do it and hope for the best. And it's always worked out. So I knew that somehow there would be a way that it would work out. And luckily it did.
How do you develop that confidence in what many people might chastise as blind faith? How do you know that it's going to work out without knowing how it's going to work out?
Part of me wants to answer that and just say it's like who I am. The other part, you know, I haven't really reflected on why I am that way. I guess it's just, again, those series of smaller feats and things working out in the past and taking that leap on a smaller scale so many times before that it's sort of built me up to just know that. And I truly believe that anything's possible. I don't think that because I was born within a middle class family that I need to have this boring traditional 9-to-5 life. I guess within myself, I want to be so much more, and to become so much more than where I'm at, it takes a lot of risks and doing things I've never done and doing things that make you uncomfortable. But the desire for which I want to achieve that and get to that point is so much more than, oh, what if it doesn't work out? So to me, I guess it's just how bad do you want it? And I wanted it so bad. I guess, yeah, when you want something that bad, you'll do anything to make it happen. And so I guess it really comes down to how bad do you want it? There'll always be excuses. There'll never be a right time. It's just up to you to decide when that time is right.
Yeah. And I think a lot of what you talked about with regards to knowing how much you want something and at the same time doing all these experiments, taking these smaller risks to develop the self-confidence in yourself and the self-belief that you'll be able to figure it out. I think it comes down to a topic that a lot of my guests talk about. I think 9 out of 10 guests end up talking about self-awareness in a large capacity. And I think that's incredibly important, the idea of really knowing yourself, understanding what you're capable, what you're not capable of, understanding how much risk you can take as well, and what other people might perceive to be risks, but are not risks for yourself. So I appreciate you entertaining my questions. I like asking questions like that.
Yeah, I like it.
Yeah.
Sorry. I think that it's also, you're always learning. So when you make mistakes, it's not a mistake, or when you do something that wasn't the right option, you're always learning and it's always taking you on this other path. So I think that the way you perceive what a problem is or what an obstacle is, I think that that will have an impact as well. Because for me, it's just a learning opportunity. Like, okay, that didn't work. Now what's next? Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Perfect. And again, rewinding, because you also talked about something that I also did as well when I was trying to decide what I wanted to do after graduation. And that's really trying out different things that interested you and giving yourself a chance to really explore what you like, what you don't like, which then gives you the self-awareness to develop your criteria list on what you know you want and don't want. So could you talk a little bit about that? And I'm also going to squeeze in an additional question, because I noticed you haven't talked about volunteering in Kenya with a nonprofit organization. So I wanted to see how all of that ties in. It also might not tie in, but I'm taking a little risk here.
Yeah. I mean, I'm not sure my timelines in terms of, okay, yeah, I did go to Kenya before I had made this decision. It's funny because I'm looking right now and I have this letter that I wrote to myself when I was in Kenya. And in Kenya, I gained a lot of perspective. And the interesting perspective is that I think that sometimes people think, oh, Kenya, why don't we go there and help and do something? And I mean, that is what I was doing. I was going to build a school. So I thought, oh, you hear and you see these things on the media and it's like, okay, go help Kenya. What I realized is that it's so interesting and fascinating how happy they were. And they didn't need all this Western stuff being pushed on them in order for them to be happy or to succeed. I mean, there are some challenges in rural areas where they're growing their food. If there's a drought, their food doesn't grow. That's a challenge. And I recognize that there are challenges. But with my experience in Kenya, I was able to see them living such simple lives and being so happy. They're so happy. When you're with the kids, they're just like any other kid and they're just full of energy and they're crazy and they're all over the place and they're so fun. And I just think it gave me a lot of perspective. And I remember one of the little kids asking me what I did. And I had to try to somehow explain advertising and online and what that was. Like, it just wasn't in their area. And it almost made you feel like insignificant in a way. I'm not even this contributing member to society, like a doctor or a teacher. And I'm just putting these pictures and words on signs that you see in places. And it just reminded me that at the end of the day, if you have food, water, shelter, no matter what happens, especially in Canada, people are going to make sure you have food, water, and shelter. You're going to try to do it yourself. If somehow you fail at that, we have support of the government. Someone will make sure you have food or water or shelter, right? And so in this letter that I wrote to myself, it was just that reminder of that's what's important. That's what you need. People want food, shelter, water, also friendships, love. Those things are important. But we build up so many things to be such a bigger deal than it is. But when you simplify it down to what's really important in life, all those other things aren't important. So it just makes you more susceptible to taking risks because you know, okay, at the end of the day, I'm going to have what I need to survive as a human. So it really isn't that big of a deal. Mm-hmm. When you think of just like how big the universe and the world is, it really isn't a big deal. And it really isn't as big as you build it up in your head.
And I love that story of you trying to explain advertising to somebody who might not even have exposure to the internet and all these other things. But at the same time, they're already so happy without all of those extra things that bombard us every day, all these notifications, all these materialistic things, advertisements that we see. So it's very interesting because you're right. Like when you're in that position, it's like, who's the wiser person here? Who's the happier person? Who has a more fulfilling life? And if you ask me, I wouldn't know how to answer that question.
Exactly. And there's actually another moment I want to share that was very impactful for me in Kenya. We were sitting with one of the mamas and we were able to ask her questions about her life and she asked us questions about ours. You know, her typical day is raising the children, getting food, going for water walks to get the water, bring the water back, laundry, that sort of thing. And that essentially is their whole day because it takes time to harvest the food and this and cook it. And they asked us, they're like, what do you guys do, right? If you're not farming and you're not doing this and that, like, what do you do? And we're like, oh my goodness. Like, we just try to, as a Western society, just entertain ourselves. We watch TV, we go out to dinner, we have drinks. It's just really about entertainment. And we have all these things to make our lives easier, like a washing machine. We had to do our washing by hand and it took so long. And then we have this amazing washing machine that saves us so much time. And then we waste it to just entertain ourselves. And it just puts so much perspective of, okay, well, what do we do? And you're like, oh my goodness, I'm sitting with this lady who is just hardworking and raising a family. And she's asking what we do. And we're so much more privileged. And we're wasting that time to just entertain ourselves and find more ways to make our lives easier when in reality, we couldn't be in a better scenario or situation.
Wow, that's really eye-opening. And I never thought about it that way. May I ask, how did she respond to your answer? And how did you also describe, like, I sit in front of a piece of metal and I watch a TV show?
It's so hard to explain when we heard ourselves say it, because you know it and you know it in your head. But when you say it, it just becomes so real. And from what I remember, the group, we were just really quiet. You could tell everyone was just sinking in that, oh my goodness, like we do nothing. I can't quite remember her response, but I do remember as a group, we just got really quiet and gained a lot of perspective in that moment. It was a very big self-reflection moment.
That's so crazy. And so you mentioned that was before you decided to quit. As I imagine, I'm sure it made a huge impact on looking at things in perspective. So now moving forward to experimenting with the things that you thought you would have a passion in and really making use of your time to learn more about yourself. How did you go about that and the lessons that you learned?
I think just going through that experience and just trying out these new things, it just helps you better understand what you like, what you don't like. And then when you find something that you sort of like a bit more than the rest, you start pursuing that. And then that goes into another direction and another direction. I spent a lot of time during that process. I mean, I was working with a life coach. I was reading a lot of books. I was becoming more self-aware as a person. I was meditating and taking care of myself in terms of like making sure I was working out, eating healthy.
Okay. So tell us about self-awareness, because that buzzword just came out. Like all of these things you were doing was to develop self-awareness, but what is self-awareness and why even bother? Why is it a necessary step? Like, would you have been able to do everything you're doing now if you just skipped all of that?
I don't know how to answer that because I don't know any other way than the way that I took. And I think that for me, I'm always trying to develop as a person, personally, professionally. I always want to develop and evolve and keep learning. Mm-hmm. And for me, this was a way of further developing as a person.
Because that's what it's about, right? How your interpretation and your experiences have led you to cultivate and to really design your unique way of living that just so happens to be the digital nomadic lifestyle. It could have been something else and it would have been just as exciting.
Self-awareness at the end of the day is being aware of yourself and understanding your shortcomings and your strengths and navigating in that way. So understanding, okay, if I have this weakness that I want to develop, then I will pursue ways to improve that area of my life. With self-awareness as well, it helps, I guess, connect you more with yourself. And with that better understanding, it can help you navigate in a direction that's more true to who you are.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And I think what you said there, it really captures why it's important. It's almost like I was recently in Chiang Mai and we did a 1-day Buddhist meditation. And then a lot of the concepts they talked about were like mindfulness, really understanding yourself. Fun fact, Buddhism is actually not a religion. It's a philosophy. So it's pretty cool how Thailand, their national quote religion is Buddhism. That's so cool. That's crazy.
I love that you say that because it's so interesting because I don't consider myself a religious person, but there are elements of Buddhism that I connect with. And I would never say that I am that because I just don't want to define myself within the limits of religion. And I like that it's more of a how you've just explained it. That's amazing. That's how, yeah, great.
Yeah, it's cool. Really cool. And the reason I bring up Buddhism is because in Buddhism, the idea is that once you go through all these meditation, mindfulness activities, you practice all your principles and their doctrines, you can get to a point where you become enlightened, right? That's like the ultimate form of self-awareness. When you talk to people who have started diving into mindfulness, self-improvement, and when you ask them to explain what it is, it's very difficult because it almost becomes second nature. But for people who have not begun that process, it's also similar to digital nomadism. For people who haven't even heard of digital nomadism, explaining that concept is so difficult because there's like a pretty big gap in between. But once you cross it, it becomes like, wow, the path was always there. You just didn't have the guidance, or it was just never something that was on your radar. And I think to your point, that's why you went through university. That's why I went through university. We were never told, we were never aware of an alternative path. So self-awareness really gives you an opportunity to get rid of all the darkness, the mist, so that you can see things clearly for what they are. Because you know where you are and you know what you're looking at more or less. That was an interesting tangent.
I think that it reminds me, now that you're saying all of that, I think there's two things to take away from here is that with doing this whole self-awareness type thing, at that point in time, I was doing a lot of personal development. I was meditating all the time, eating really healthy. And I think it's important to know that it's a practice. You don't just meditate and then all of a sudden it's like, this is awesome. It's a practice. It's like working out. You can't go to the gym and all of a sudden leave with a six pack. You have to do it day in and day out. And I think self-awareness and personal development is that consistent action of day after day until you finally start seeing those results. Just like going to the gym, it's something that you have to exercise. And I had never been so happy in my life. And it was this state of bliss that I just cannot explain in words. And I think that's when I realized no matter what is happening on the outside world, having that happiness and fulfillment and all of that, a lot of that comes from the inside. And it comes from a lot of inside work. And it's really about mindset and personal development. And that will take you so much further than anything else. The state of that you can get in, you say enlightenment, but the state that I got to with my practice and whatnot was so inexplainable. And now I understand why Buddhists and stuff say that we live in this state of suffering, because once mm-hmm. I saw how great it could be, I realized that is so true. And I just think that once you have a taste of how great that is and know that a lot of true happiness comes from within, then you don't put so much pressure on those external things that seem like a big deal that aren't, because mm-hmm. it does come from within. And it is a practice. It's something that if you're not continually doing, you won't get the benefits of it. And it's ongoing and ever going.
Definitely. Do you have any resources that you really, really enjoyed that really helped you along this process that you can recommend?
Yeah, some incredible books. The Untethered Soul is amazing. The Monk Who Sold His Ferrari, that's also a good read. I mean, in terms of personal development and self-awareness, I think that those two books are pretty good.
Okay.
Yeah.
Perfect. I'll be sure to link to that in the show notes.
Cool.
So we talked a lot about the self-awareness, the introspective stuff. We haven't even touched on remote year. And I do that intentionally because I can't stress how important it is to focus on yourself before looking at the external. Because I see a lot of digital nomads who seem to just skip all of the introspective stuff, just show up to Chiang Mai or whatever and decide to start a business. And I think anything that's not built on strong foundations and the foundation is being you, it will crumble at like the slightest external shockwave or whatever you want to call it.
Yeah, you are so spot on. And I learned from my own journey being a digital nomad that something I try to stress with people is that if you take your existing life and you're just burning out at your corporate career, doing that in Thailand isn't any better. You're just in Thailand. And it really is about that personal development. And that is a plug, but with WhyFly Nomads, the program that I created, that is why I've incorporated the personal development as such a core foundation aspect to it. Because through my journey as a digital nomad, I realized that you have to do that work within. And it's so critical to succeeding and feeling fulfilled and doing all that personal work. Because as much as everyone thinks if you get a laptop and go to Thailand, your problems are solved, you couldn't be further from the truth. And it really comes from within. And it's so important to do that personal development in order to succeed and to navigate this lifestyle, life in general, but especially this lifestyle, because you're going through so many unique experiences that you need to have that way, like you said, that foundation.
On that note, like you talked about your journey of digital nomadism, let's move into the digital nomad portion. And I guess a great place to start is remote year. And to just give my audience a run through of what remote year is, it's basically a program where you travel with 75 other participants for 12 months to 12 different countries. And they take care of all the logistics. So you don't have to worry about booking tickets, accommodation, finding places with good internet. You can just focus on the experience of being there and with the community. So with that out of the way, what I'm curious to hear about is your experience on the program. And let's just keep it high level and then we'll dive into things as you share more.
Okay. The hardest thing to answer is when someone says, how is remote year? Because that's like saying, tell me about the last year of your life. How was it? And you're like, it was the last year of my life. There is a lot that happens. That is what it's like asking what remote year is like. I can say that it's a journey in that there are a lot of ups and downs. And with those ups and downs, there's a lot of personal development that happens. And I think the nature of just moving to so many places so quickly all the time has that level of personal development within it.
Yeah. Okay, so let me rephrase it then. What did you learn from living in a different place for 12 months? Did you enjoy it as a lifestyle?
I would say it's so interesting. When I started remote year, I wouldn't have considered myself a digital nomad. I was just looking for a way to travel that worked. Like, okay, this is a sustainable way to travel. This is my option. When I left remote year, I would consider myself full on digital nomad.
So in that sense, what is your definition of digital nomad then?
This is a great question and a very controversial one as well. Okay, sorry. And also going back to what you're saying, I mean, when I started remote year, going to a new country every month was good and great. By the end, it was exhausting. And I think by the end, I was at the point where I so much considered myself a digital nomad. I was ready to be done with remote year when remote year was done. The last few months, I was just exhausted. And I think I was exhausted from how frequently we were changing places. I would have probably stayed in locations for 3 months at a time. And another few factors were playing in that sort of left me exhausted. You have this whole group, this huge group that you're navigating on top of traveling, on top of moving to a new country, on top of trying to work, on top of all these things, right? And that big group was just another added thing to try to manage in your daily life. And I think that by the end of remote year, being a digital nomad, I became more clear on what I want, what I don't want, what I like, what I don't like. I realized I'm a beach person and remote year was a lot of cities. And by the end, that was just getting to me. I was just like, I don't want to be in another city anymore. I don't like it. I just don't. I want to be by the beach. I know where I want to travel. I have that clarity. I'm grateful that I was, I don't want to say forced to go to locations I wouldn't have gone to, but I mean, some were very surprisingly nice. Some of the locations, like I would have never gone to Slovenia, and Slovenia is beautiful and it's great. And so I learned those things, right? But I think that by the end, I got clarity on how I work and what I need. And I knew there were certain things about the remote year structure that just weren't working for me anymore. Might be good for a short amount of time, but after a year, it was just tiring. So I think that for me, I would need to be in a place longer. I would need to be at a beach. I think this is a very controversial topic. What's an expat? What's a digital nomad? How frequently do you have to be traveling to be considered a digital nomad? I feel like I'm now at the point where I'm just going to do me, and whether someone considers that digital nomad, not digital nomad, I don't care what people consider me. The big umbrella term of the general idea of having the flexibility to work from anywhere in the world, to me, is essentially a digital nomad, having that flexibility and freedom. I think it's very easy to get caught up on that term and very hung up on that term and put a lot of pressure on that term. And one of the things for me is now just like, I don't care. I'm just going to like do me. I'm going to go on a trip when I want to go on a trip. I'm not going to go. Like, I'm just going to sort of just do what I do and not really get too hung up on the word and the definition. It's so hard to say what that means. And I think a topic that a lot of people would disagree on, that could be a whole podcast episode on its own, probably.
Yeah, I mean, people get hung up over labels, for better or for worse. But I like to think about it just as an umbrella term, like you mentioned, without getting too serious or too in detail about that. A more fun question, a less thought-provoking question. Mm-hmm. What were your three favorite places that you visited on remote year? And then, or your three least favorite? And then the other six, you know, don't need to mention.
Yeah, one of the locations wasn't really a remote year location, but I went on a side trip for a weekend, which turned into a month because I loved the country so much. So that's Bali. I was in Malaysia, and so I went to Bali just for a weekend side trip, and I absolutely loved it. And I should have listened when I read online, you cannot have enough time in Bali. And I thought, of course you can have enough time in Bali. I'll go just go for the weekend. But yeah, Bali was my absolute favorite place in the entire world.
Really?
Yeah.
I'm going there next month. Okay. I'm going to be there all April.
Amazing. And I don't understand why there's this controversy of like, oh, Bali is not that great. It's overhyped. Like, no, it's not. It's amazing. It's absolutely amazing. I don't think it's overhyped. And I almost don't want to tell people how amazing it is because I want people to think it's not amazing so it doesn't become something that it's not. But yeah, hands down Bali. Next to that, I would say Thailand. And I love being by the ocean and that fresh ocean air and just being by the beach and in the sun and out in nature. I mean, I had that in Bali and Thailand.
Where in Thailand were you in?
Koh Phangan.
Oh, okay. Is that South Thailand?
It is like the East islands on the east side.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. And then Buenos Aires. I never would have thought that I would love BA as much as I did, but it's so great there. And it's hard because now I look at countries as, would I travel there or would I be a digital nomad and live there, right? There are a lot of places we went to that would have been cool to travel to, but I just did not like as a digital nomad. And there are places that I like as a digital nomad that I wouldn't like as a traveler. So I started to see countries in this lens of digital nomad. Are there a lot of cool places to work? Are there a lot of cafes? Where as a traveler, I didn't care about those things. So I sort of see countries with these two different perspectives now. Like I think of some countries that I've been to that are so amazing and beautiful, but the internet probably isn't good. So it's probably not going to be one of my favorite digital nomad spots, right?
Okay, that'll all change in like 10, 20 years.
Oh yeah. So my least favorite, and this is tricky to say because when I say my least favorite, every month, some months were more difficult for me than others. And because of that, it impacted my experience with that country. And it maybe didn't necessarily have to do with the country, but just where I was at on that journey on remote year. Mm-hmm. But I can say that Istanbul, Turkey, I was very overwhelmed there because I am a beach person and that city is huge. And I got lost in it for like 6 hours. I think it was 6 hours, honestly. So that was a very overwhelming month for me. I mean, the accommodations had no natural sunlight in our rooms. So I would be waking up at these weird hours because we didn't have like these proper windows with natural light.
Really?
Yeah. So that was a very difficult month. Japan was also very difficult because, well, it was very cold in Japan. I think a lot of countries are very accommodating to the Western culture and English speaking. Mm-hmm. And Japan is very much has maintained its culture. You are definitely in a different country. You don't see a lot of English. Not a lot of people speak English. So it's definitely more challenging to be there. And I got so sick in Japan, the sickest mm-hmm. I've ever been. Also in Istanbul, I got homesick for the first and only ever time in my life, which was weird too. Istanbul was hard. Japan was hard. It just wasn't a great month. It was just cold. I was overwhelmed. I was sick. There's just a lot going on.
Yeah, it does seem like a lot of it's also down to the fact that a month is really short and there can be a lot of external factors. Because
yeah.
I think whenever you move somewhere, there's a bedding in period. But with a month, you know, you don't get a chance to give a place more time, even if you want to, because you're on a sit itinerary. So I can definitely understand that. And I think that's really the big takeaway. I like how you were able to explain why you didn't like it and perhaps the fact that it was external factors that were completely irrespective of the country itself. So I think that's really the big takeaway. And you also mentioned that you had some low points and high points on the trip. So I thought it'd be interesting to ask you about your low points. I think one of which you mentioned is you were physically sick. And then in Istanbul, you were actually homesick. And I think these are things that people don't really tend to talk about when it comes to the glamorization or the glorification of the digital nomad lifestyle.
Yeah. As a traveler, I had never understood how or why people would get homesick. I couldn't understand that at all. And then it happened to me, and it is the worst thing. The way I can explain being homesick, it's almost like this depression that comes on and you don't see it coming. It comes out of nowhere and there's nothing you can really do to fix it. It just goes away. I tried to do lots of things to help myself. When I was feeling homesick, I tried to bring in elements that I would typically have at home. So like putting up pictures. At home, I had plants. So I went and got a plant to make it feel more homey. And I was trying to do all these things. And I mean, at the end of the day, it just took time. It was probably 2 weeks all said and done. But yeah, I mean, that's the other thing too, is like life doesn't become perfect when you live this lifestyle. You still have all these challenges to face.
Mm-hmm.
But from that experience, it really helped me learn that you're so fully in control of everything when you're a digital nomad.
Yeah.
And that's a good thing and it's a bad thing, because when I'm going through these low points, you learn, holy shit, I'm capable of a lot more than I ever thought I was. And I can do this. And if I can get over that, you just feel more invincible. When I was in Japan and just like so sick, I literally would have flown home. By the time I flown home, it would have taken like 2 days. I knew I'd be better by then. It's a great exercise for yourself to know what you're capable of and what you're and pushing those limits and boundaries, because when you have to go through that and you push those limits so far, literally beyond comfort, I mean, okay, traveling, you might be out of your comfort zone, but when you're super sick and you want nothing more than to be home, you really truly understand what going beyond your comfort zone is.
Mm-hmm.
And it just makes you that much more resilient and appreciative of what you do have and the luxuries, the small luxuries that you do have. But yeah, I mean, it's a really crappy thing to experience, but you really grow as a person.
I see. So tell me about the community aspect and how important it was to have other people who could also, you know, relate to your experiences, to share your experiences with, because I think that's something we haven't touched on, but I'm sure, like, you know, when you're sick, it helped that somebody else was probably there helping you or guiding you through the experience.
So when I was sick, I remember specifically, and such great timing, my cards were compromised in Japan. So when I was super sick, trying to get pain meds, I was in so much pain, and then I couldn't pay for it because my cards were compromised. And I was like, are you kidding me? And thank God there was the community there that we had, so then I could borrow money and get my medicine and then figure it and sort it all out after. But I think it's really important to have a community, and that can happen in various ways, whether it's at a co-working space or on a program like Remote Year, but surrounding yourself with people that get you and understand you. I mean, being on Remote Year for so long, those people were the black sheeps in their environments. But when you have a ton of black sheeps together, that became my norm again. When I came back to Canada and I wasn't surrounded by those people anymore, it was very overwhelming, because you almost forget that that's not normal, that having so many people thinking like that is just really not normal.
That's really interesting because it goes back to your average of the five people you're around the most. Like, that's a cliched saying. And that was part of my intentional decision to also be part of a program. I'm on a program called the Remote Trip. For my last year in Chicago, when I decided to become a digital nomad and make the transition, I gave myself a year in Chicago to figure out the business side of stuff. But literally, like, every single day was just me working out of my apartment by myself. Like, I knew no other digital nomads. I didn't know anyone else doing it. But the second I got to Chiang Mai last month to start this whole thing, you just know, like, you're around like-minded people, you're in your element. It's like almost a seamless transition where there's no distinction between, like, you and the people around you. Everything kind of just feels right. So I think that it's great to have a community, and definitely something I cherish right now. Even if I were to travel by myself in the future, I'd probably make it a priority to put myself somewhere where there were other people who I could relate to, just because when you experience a flock of black sheep and being not the odd one out, it's kind of a liberating feeling. It empowers you and makes you feel vindicated and validated in a way.
Absolutely. And you just feed off of it, and that synergy and the energy, and it creates so many opportunities. And I think that having a community is so important, a community that gets you and understands you. And however you find that community, there are lots of options, but I think that it's so important. Like, even on Remote Year, the biggest feature benefit that Remote Year has is the people themselves.
Mm-hmm. On that train of thought, nearing the end of the interview, I wanted to talk about Why Fly Nomads and how you conceive the idea of your experience on Remote Year and what you're really trying to change with Why Fly Nomads. Because obviously there's a bunch of programs like Remote Year that's popping up, but what problem does Why Fly Nomads solve, and how is it different from the slew of options that are currently available to people who are at home potentially listening to this right now?
Why Fly was essentially created where I saw gaps on Remote Year. I thought that there wasn't enough professional development focus. I was surprised that they weren't helping them find jobs. So I wanted to solve that problem. And I also wanted to give people an alternative way to break into this lifestyle. For me, I thought Remote Year was my only option. So this is just another way to break into the lifestyle and reduce that barrier to entry and almost do it on your own terms. For me, the program differentiates a lot in the sense that it's very educational based and it's very action oriented. So it's really there, you're coming, you're going to learn a lot. And it's about taking action and making this a reality and making this lifestyle happen for you. Another way that we really differentiate ourselves is that focus on personal development, mindset, everything. Personal development is so core and critical to just feeling fulfilled and happy and becoming successful. So we really integrate that into the program as well. My ultimate big vision for the brand of Why Fly Nomads is essentially changing, I guess you could say, societal norms. I mean, become okay with this idea of working 9 to 5 in a cubicle, glorifying being busy and overworked. And I think that needs to change. I don't think we need to work 40 hours a week. I don't think that we need to work in cubicles. I think that we'll laugh at that. And it's really helping to reshape and redefine not just how we work, but how we live, and that it's okay that we pursue something that we're passionate about. So many people think, oh, I want to be an artist, but that doesn't pay the bills. And we're okay with glorifying these burnt out lifestyle of working crazy hours, and we somehow put not following your passion below that. And I think that's completely wrong. I think it should be okay to follow your passion, and that should be the glorified option that you're doing something you love. So it's really to change, not just how we work, but how we live as people and where we put our priorities and taking care of ourselves and our personal health and wellness, because with our corporate careers, we've lost focus on that.
Yeah, I would agree with that. Going through the education system, even within going to the corporate world, there's not one instance where I was taught self-improvement, self-awareness, personal development, mindfulness. All of these things that we were fortunate enough to learn were through our own initiative outside of school, outside of traditional structures. And oftentimes it's triggered by some deep-rooted resentment or like unfulfillment. And there's so many people who never have the opportunity to interact with these things because they might just not have had those experiences, or nobody had told them that these things existed. So I think what you're doing is very admirable. And it's definitely the reason why I started the Remote Lifestyle, the podcast, the a YouTube channel, really to educate and provide content first. So could you tell us what the structure of Wi-Fi Nomads is like? What's the length of time? Is it online, in person? And also, why is it in Bali?
Essentially what it is, so it's a 2-week program that takes place in Bali, Indonesia. So it's taking place in September. That's when the first group's gonna happen. And it's really about helping professionals live more passionate and fulfilling lives by understanding how to live this lifestyle, but also incorporating personal health and wellness. There's essentially 4 core components to the program. It's a lot of series of workshops. It's very interactive and very action oriented. So it's not just like, okay, I could just go and read this online, or, oh, you can become a freelancer and earn an income, because that doesn't help. It's here's how you become a freelancer. Let's make it happen. Now let's start doing it. But the 4 core components are that entrepreneurial avenue, so becoming a freelancer or understanding those business fundamentals of building an online business or brand, the employee avenue, how to convince your boss to let you work remotely, making that career transition, preparing your resume and interview skills. We do focus more on the entrepreneurial avenue because we want people to do something that they're passionate about and that makes them feel fulfilled. And that's usually entrepreneurial realm. So we'll definitely focus more on the entrepreneurial aspect. The 4th core component is focusing on the lifestyle. So how you work remotely, how you manage time zones, find reliable Wi-Fi, the logistics of visas and taxes, budgeting, how to pick a destination, health and safety, cultural integration. So all of those things that come with living the lifestyle. And then the 4th core component is about that personal and professional development and doing those exercises, incorporating yoga and meditation, bringing in coaches from a professional aspect, different masterminds, networking events, that sort of thing. So those are the 4 core components. And with each of those, it's a lot of, I guess you could call them workshops. It's condensing all the information to the most critical information you need to know, providing worksheets so that participants can implement this really fast, but just really having participants understand how to build an online business, how to pursue this lifestyle, but really about taking action and learning from people that have that experience and are living this lifestyle. And in terms of structure, I mean, like a typical day, get up, have breakfast. Breakfast is included. We try to make this experience as immersive as possible. So we don't want to just take you and be like, okay, we're in this cool location and we're going to teach you this. It's really about immersing yourself. So we're going to be in different villas around the area. Everyone has their own spot, kitchenettes, because as a digital nomad, you need a kitchen. We'll be working in the local co-working spaces, scootering around. I really want people to be fully immersed in this lifestyle. So I mean, typical day, breakfast, we'll do our yoga meditation, workshop, break for lunch. Throughout the day, we'll be incorporating different personal and professional development activities scattered throughout. So maybe it's in the afternoon, we're having a personal development exercise.
No, it sounds fantastic. Yeah. So what are your metrics for success? Once people go through your program, what's the change that you're hoping will take place in their lives? What are the types of people you're trying to attract? So the before and after.
At the end of the day, it's about helping people essentially become a digital nomad. I hate to put it in such a simplistic term because it's so much more than that, but essentially, that's what it is. So at the end of the day, our participants need to be at a point where they can sustain themselves working remotely and be able to live this lifestyle. I do not guarantee that someone's going to be 40 hours a week working remotely after 2 weeks. That's not realistic. It takes time. You're going to learn everything you need to know and start taking action. But by no means am I promising that you're going to be this ultimate digital nomad earning a full-time income after 2 weeks. Just absolutely not realistic. It takes time. And that time is going to be different for everyone depending on their skill sets and their background, and some will be faster than others. My ultimate metric for success is that participants can successfully pursue this lifestyle and have all the tools and knowledge and everything they need and the support to make it happen.
Right.
Without that, the core of the program doesn't exist. So it's critical that that happens. The types of people we're bringing on, they have the skill set or the knowledge base that transitions nicely into becoming a digital nomad. So I can't take a construction worker, for example, on my fly and say, I'm going to help you become a digital nomad, because there's just too much of a knowledge gap that needs to be filled. So a lot of people have a bit more of that technical background, or they're at least technically savvy and very driven and motivated, entrepreneurial, and just ready to make shit happen and just ready to do it. And I mean, that's also critical to the program. I say that 50% of the program is the program itself, but the other 50 is the people we bring. And it's about creating that synergy and collaborations and that energy to the group. I'm also looking for a very diverse group. And we've had people apply from over 40 countries, and we're really encouraging bringing that diversity to the group, whether that's people of all ages, all ethnicities, all citizenships, really bringing together a diverse group, because I really truly believe and see value in bringing a group that together that is diverse and the amazing things that can happen when you incorporate that diversity. Mm-hmm. In terms of why Bali, should I go into that? Are you still good for time? I know you booked out this room. There's pretty much three reasons why I chose Bali. One, that this is intended to be an immersive experience. So we needed to pick a spot where digital nomads go. It would be the easiest way to transition into this lifestyle, going to a digital nomad hub. So Bali is a digital nomad hub. So that was one of the reasons. You know, I'm obviously familiar with the area. I've been there. I don't want to bring people to some place that I'm not familiar with. Another thing is that Bali has this inexplicable essence to it that is really hard to explain. It's almost like this energy. It's a good place to go when you're looking to make a life change, I guess you could say. It's a great place to disconnect. It has this calmness about it. When I went to Bali, I was there for like 2 hours. It was in the middle of the night that I arrived, and I knew instantly it was just this feeling. To me, that brings the perfect element to the environment that I want to create with the program.
Right. Was Eat, Pray, Love in Bali?
Yeah, it was.
Oh, okay. Yeah. I haven't seen that, but somebody mentioned that before. Okay, perfect. So to wrap things up, what are your goals for 2017? And what are you super excited for? I can probably guess what it is.
Obviously, yes. I'm very excited for Wi-Fi Nomads. I am so excited. The part I'm most excited about is to just share this experience and knowledge and information with other people so that they can start living a more passionate and fulfilling life. So many people think it's like beyond them, or, oh, I don't deserve this, or this is for those people. It's not for me. It can be for so many people. And I want to break that barrier and help as many people as I can live this lifestyle. So I'm really excited about that. In terms of goals and what's to come, I've got a lot stirring in my mind. My main focus is just to really perfect this Wi-Fi Nomads program so that everything goes smoothly. I mean, the program's in another 6 months, so a lot of refining. We test the workshop material before it even goes to our participants, so there's a lot that needs to be done in terms of prep. There are things that I foresee long term, but I'm trying to keep my focus on the program itself right now, because that is the biggest priority. But I do see the brand evolving around this lifestyle. And when I say lifestyle, I mean also that element of personal development as well is really important. So I see it evolving in that realm of the future of work and whatnot.
You're currently in Canada right now, and is that where you're based for the majority of the year, or are you going to be splitting time between Canada and Bali?
Yeah, I'll mostly be here. I am headed to Colombia in a couple months, and then...
When are you going to be there?
Yeah.
I'm going to be in Medellin in July.
Oh, okay. I'm going to be there in May.
Oh, okay.
Okay. Yeah. Cool. I think the 9th to the end of May. That's awesome. Cool.
Okay.
Yeah. So I'm going to be there, and then mostly based in Canada. Mm-hmm. I mean, a lot of my time, energy, and resources are going into the program, and then Bali in September. And obviously going before the participants get there to make sure everything is good to go.
Yeah, perfect. Do you think you'll be splitting more time outside of Canada as time progresses, or are you more or less settled there?
My boyfriend is based in Canada. So for me, I'll mostly probably be here. And then it will just be a matter of going here or there. For example, like Colombia, like going to Colombia for a few weeks, coming back, going to Bali, coming back. So just having that flexibility to just sort of go whenever the next...
Yeah, just put them through the program. It's no
problem. I know. Sign them up.
sign them up.
Yeah.
All right. Perfect. So final question. How can people listening right now follow you, what you're doing, Wi-Fi Nomads, and all that jazz?
I'm on a lot of social media. So just looking up Wi-Fi Nomads, it's W-I-F-L-Y Nomads. The idea there is that you're flying around to chase Wi-Fi as a digital nomad. So that's sort of where the name came from. And so just searching that, going to wifinomads.com. My email's Kate at wifinomads.com. The Remote Nomad, the travel blog. If you just Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, that sort of thing, just searching The Remote Nomad and you'll find that.
All right. Perfect. I wanted to thank thank you for hopping on the podcast. We talked about some really interesting things, and I loved how you were so candid about sharing the year leading up to your transition, because I think that's almost more important than actually making the jump and booking that ticket, because once you have that conviction, that foundation set, everything else, to your point, will work out for the best.
And I appreciate you focusing on that angle, because I don't think I've had anyone that has interviewed me really focus on that. And I think that you're spot on, that it's often overlooked. And I think it's an important thing that literally makes it happen for yourself. And it is that foundational item. So thank you.
Yeah. And we'll have to have you on next year so you can give us a recap of how Why Fly Nomads goes.
Yeah.
And everything will be in the show notes. So if you guys want to follow up on anything that we talked about, you'll have all the information there. That's a wrap for my interview with Kate. If you want to find out more about Kate with more information about everything we talked about, visit theremotelifestyle.com/31. There, you'll find the show notes for this week's episode. Thanks for listening to this episode of The Remote Podcast. Be sure to leave a review of the show so that I can continue to improve it. If you liked what you heard, go ahead and hit subscribe so you never miss out on an episode. If you're ready to take the leap and live the remote lifestyle, visit theremotelifestyle.com/remote to sign up for our free email course titled Become a Digital Nomad in 7 Steps, even if you have no idea where to start. The course will take you from sitting in your office wondering what to do with your life to having a plan of action to live and work remotely. So make sure you don't miss out by visiting theremotelifestyle.com/remote. That's all for now, and I'll see you in the next episode.